What would you say about the natural environment is most interesting to you?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Ah, okay. I could go on all day about that. I always, when I'm working with young people, I always say that if you get bored of looking at nature, you're not looking hard enough. You know, because every leaf you turn over, every giant view you see, every tiny minuscule little thing scribbling around on sort of a pile of poo or, you know, whatever it is, there's always something you don't know about it, you know, and there's always something else to learn. And even when you think you know something really well, like, I don't know, a sparrow, suddenly you'll discover something amazing about it. So I love that about it. I love its intricacies, and I love the sort of fact that we just don't really get it yet. But I think what I mostly love about it is the fact that it's just beautiful. You know, it fills my eyes with beauty. I really miss it when I'm not seeing green and I'm not seeing blue and I'm not sort of feeling the wind. I just, you know, I feel like my body, my soul is going stale. So I think there's a sort of, I'd be a hippie if I said it was spiritual, because it's not really. It's just something that lifts me up, makes my heart sort of sing, you know. So I love that. I was just been down at Senham for a few days, standing on Land's End and stuff. Well, not quite Land's End, but, you know, and it just, you know, I came away from that just buzzing. So I could talk all day, but I love it, basically. It's great. Nice one, nature.
How you like focusing, how you like the fact that you can take any level of detail away from nature. But throughout your 14 years that you've spent working with the Eden Project, have you noticed any effects of climate change on the natural environment?
Wow. Yes. It's hard to say, isn't it? Because you've got to be really careful about separating weather from climate. I guess, you know, when I first moved down here, when I first moved to Plymouth, way before you guys were even alive, I remember it used to be very wet and damp and drizzly, and it used to do that virtually from, I don't know, October through till March next year. And it's changed. The weather has changed. The patterns have changed. And I've also noticed, like, back in 1986, things like little egrets, which are a white heron, which have just appeared from out of nowhere. And when they first arrived, everyone was going crazy about them because they just arrived and they came from Africa. So they were sort of a vaguely, not tropical bird, but subtropical bird. And now they're really common. You know, little things like that you notice over time. And I've been lucky, you know, throughout my life, I've done traveling and teaching all over the world. And I've been to places, you know, like Australia and like China and India. And they're all telling you the same thing, that, you know, their traditional farming practices aren't viable anymore, you know. And the people living in the hills in India where I went, they said they couldn't carry on the way they've been doing for thousands and thousands of years because the weather had changed so much in the short space in their lifetimes that they were running out of water, and the seasons were wobbling around. They weren't happening at the same time every time. So yeah, definitely. I mean, if your eyes are open to it, you can see little changes that might not mean much on their own, but, you know, there's a bigger picture there that is generally a little bit scary, I suppose.
Right, okay. How important do you think keeping connected with the natural world is to having a better mental well-being, and how do you think people can be better connected with nature and, by extension, reduce our effect on it?
Wow. That's a good question and an enormous question. You could write a PhD on that. Okay, I might have to come back to you to remind me of the other bits, but let's start with the sort of the connection bit. You know, it's a really hard one to measure, but I do know that when you're working outside, it's fun. I mean, that's the main thing, isn't it? It's fun. It's much more fun learning outside than in a classroom. You know, you can learn for real. You're not doing pretend activities some teachers set you. You can actually learn how to light a fire or how to plant a tree or what to look for in the hedges, you know, that kind of thing. And it's real, you know. So I think the experiences outside are real, whether they're sort of learning experiences or whether they're emotional experiences. You know, there's nothing pretend about it. It's actually there, it's real, and it's wonderful. And so being connected to nature is incredibly important. And, you know, whether you live in the city or in the town, it's easy to get disconnected and spend life away from it. I don't know how your lockdown was, but I just immersed myself in nature and sort of remembered to myself, that's a rubbish sentence, you know what I mean, but anyway, reminded myself just how important it was and how it kind of just made me feel. I'll tell you a little story about when I was in Plymouth. I used to work for social services and probation, and we used to take really naughty boys and girls out into the woods, mainly because they'd smashed everything up in Plymouth they could get their hands on, and we used to take them out and we used to light fires and make tea and play silly games, you know, like tag and stuff in the woods. And when the funders came out to have a look at what we were doing, we had to take them back to the office to show them the files of the young people, because they didn't believe that they were the young people we were supposed to be working with. They were so chilled and relaxed. I wouldn't say well behaved, but you know, that was fine because it was all part of the fun. But they just, you know, just being outside and lighting a fire and making tea makes a huge difference. So that connection to nature is really important. And if you don't learn to love something, if you don't get that in your heart, then why are you going to grow up and want to look after it? You know, why do you need to save it? You know, you've got to really appreciate it. And I don't mean when you grow up, but in your whole life, you know, you've got to appreciate nature to want to look after it, because that's how you value it, surely, for me. I think it's kind of that simple. I don't know, it probably isn't, but, you know, I'm a simple soul and I like to make it as simple as possible. Has that answered all your question? I feel I've missed a bit out there.
I think there was just a bit about being better connected with the natural and with nature, and how, by extension, you can reduce your effect on it.
Yes, thank you. That thing about being connected with nature, we kind of give it big words and all that kind of stuff, but actually, it just needs to be little things, you know, like opening the door in the morning and breathing in the air, or like, you know, watching, I don't know, a blackbird, or, you know, seeing the clouds. You know, it doesn't have to be some grand event or some huge great expedition where you go off and get connected with nature. It's just there, you know, and it's noticing it, and it's really important, you know. And I think that regularly noticing things is the way that you spot the changes and the seasons, and, you know, whether, you know, climate change is having a difference. And so it's really, really important. You know, if we want to look after the world, we need to kind of understand it as well as love it. You know, and those little sort of observations you make are the ones that make the difference to me. I mean, you can sit in a classroom and talk about, you know, climate change and doom and gloom and, you know, recycling and all those things. But actually, you know, nature is just under your fingernails. It's out there and it's just available for everyone, whether you live in a city or in a beautiful little town or a village in Cornwall. It's all there, and so it's really, really important. And it's something that, and this makes me really cross, you know, that our national curriculum and our education system has just failing to do, you know. In there's lots of things wrong with it, as we all know. We could spend another 6 hours talking about that, but, you know, the actual kind of appreciating nature and art around nature and stuff is something that we don't do at schools, and I think is a huge step in missing out on that thing, you know, when you talk about why and how we look after nature better.
Right, thank you.
Kind of similar to the last question, do you think there is a link between having a connection to the natural environment and having lower overall carbon emissions?
Oh, blimey. Again, that's you're the masters of giant questions, you lot. They're brilliant. Well, yes, I think in a sort of very kind of broad way, definitely. I think the problem with climate change is it's a big problem that's happening elsewhere or in the future or something, you know, and it's really hard to get your head around it, especially if you don't really want to. And a lot of people don't really want to. So I think we need to start from where we're at, you know, start from, and I keep saying this, from your heart, and think about why these things are important, why we should care, why we should do some work, and why we should change our ways, which are quite frankly fairly comfortable, but, you know, they're not going to continue to be comfortable if we carry on the way we are. And so that connection to nature can teach us the importance of what nature does for us, you know. And I'm not just talking about emotionally, but I'm talking about how it cleans our water and our air, and it gives us food, and it gives us, you know, all the things that we need to stay alive. You know, we rely on all the time without even thinking. I read somewhere that it contributed something like $133 billion to our global economy. Now, that's a meaningless number and nobody really knows. But, you know, it's not just about, you know, sort of us in our little world. It's about the whole of humanity relying on nature all the time. So we've got to connect with it if we need to understand it, and then we need to think about why we save it. I think there's a sort of we're missing out some of the stepping stones on the way to a carbon neutral society. You know, it's not just about buying an electric car or a guitar, electric car recycling. It's about, you know, changing the way we are, you know, changing the way we are and how we do things and how we be in the world. So, yeah, definitely. It's vital. Sorry, I'm bibbling on like a lunatic. Oh, you're asking some great questions.
Yeah, that's what we aren't. That's what we're after.
Yeah, exactly. What do you hope for the G7 to bring to environmental projects, like the Eden Project, to conservational efforts?
Oof. That's a huge question as well. What I hope, I would like people to stop thinking about their, or countries to stop thinking about their own immediate needs and start thinking of us as a bunch of people living on a tiny rock in the middle of space. And then people start going, well, actually, we all have a duty to look after this place. And it's our duty. If it's happening to someone in Africa, in a tiny village on the side of a mountain with no rain, no water, then it's happening to me too. You know, this global thing that we keep talking about, we need to start thinking globally. And those people are in a really brilliant position to do that. You know, they're able to take their influence and their power and say, no, this is about everybody. It's a bit like the sort of a great example of it is the COVID vaccine argument at the moment. You know, there's no point in us having it if everybody else in the world hasn't got it. You know, and it's the same thing, really. You know, there's no point in us living a clean, green, carbon-free society if other countries are having to produce tons and tons of stuff that we're buying. You know, we have to think about this globally. So there's that. But again, going back to the other end of the scale, I also think that politicians have a duty to make this a personal thing as well. So it's not just about big numbers and, you know, people writing huge newspaper articles and, you know, making great grand speeches. It's about showing us how they and their families and their offices are also walking the talk, you know, in small ways, because that's how we're going to do it. We're not going to do it in a big grand sweepy way. I think I believe it's in lots of little bits, and they've got to show us those lots of little bits as well, you know, and be human about it and go, well, we don't know either, but let's try this out. So, yeah, both ends of the scale are really important, you know, and these people have an opportunity like no other people. Well, not quite, but, you know, they are incredibly influential, and they have a duty, I believe, and not just for you, but for me and for your children and everybody, to sort of start changing the way we do stuff.
Right, thanks. Just one last
question. Ask me tomorrow, I have a different answer.
Our last question. If you were to be able to give a message to the leaders of the G7, what would it be?
What are you going to tell your kids? What are you going to say in 30 years' time when they turn around and go, well, you could have changed this, you could have done something about it? You know, and I think that says, I'd say it to any adult, basically, but to them especially. What are you going to tell your kids? What are you going to be proud of when your kids grow up? You know, and if it is that you turn around and go, well, yeah, climate change was going to trash your future, but we've done something about it, then you could be really proud about it. But if they stand up and go, well, we could have done something about it, but hey, you just weren't worth the effort, then, you know, they're not worth worrying about.
Thank you.